Great. Today we'll be reading 1 Samuel 17, 32 to 58. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, "You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living Lord. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. "I cannot go in these," he said to Saul, "because I am not used to them." So he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in his pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in hand, approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with a shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals." David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from the sheath. After he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. Then the men of Israel and Judah surged forwards with a shout and pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath and to the gates of Ekron. Their dead was strewn along the Shirim road to Gath and Ekron. Then the Philistines returned from chasing the Philistines. When the Israelites returned from chasing the Philistines, they plundered their camp. David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem. He put the Philistine's weapons in his own tent. As Saul watched David going out to meet the Philistine, he said to Abner, commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is that young man?" Abner replied, "As surely as you live, your majesty, I don't know." The king said, "Find out whose son this young man is." As soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul, with David still holding the Philistine's head. "Whose son are you, young man?" Saul asked him. David said, "I am the son of your servant Jesse of Bethlehem."
Bible reader. Hello, you got me? Yeah. All right, take three. Hello, my name's Isaac. I'm one of the pastors here at Living Church. It's great to have you with us this morning. Great to have the kids with their fidget toys, but why did we give them round rock-shaped things on the story of David and Goliath is my question, but we'll see how we go. Well, everyone loves a good underdog story. You know that phrase, an underdog story? An underdog's a person or a group expected to lose in a given situation. And so if you don't get it, the opposite of an underdog is sort of the favourite or top dog, the one who is expected to win. And I think every generation has their films where we tell these underdog stories, whether it's Kung Fu Panda, Legally Blonde, The Castle. I'm not recommending these films, but they exist, Home Alone. And I think every sports movie just about is an underdog story, from Rocky to The Mighty Ducks to Dodgeball, which even gets the subtitle, a true underdog story, as it sends up all the other sports films. We love cheering on the little guy, the long shot. And we love underdogs because we know what it is to be up against someone or something that just feels bigger than us. And it's perhaps why our story in the Bible today is so well known. David and Goliath has become part of our culture. It's one of those classic stories that many people know. Everything from sporting matches to court cases gets called a David versus Goliath battle. Whenever a little guy takes on the big guy, we draw into this analogy to see its similarities. Even New York Times best-selling author Malcolm Gladwell has written a whole book of essays exploring this story of David and Goliath, arguing about how weakness has hidden advantages and too much strength can be a bad thing. Underdog tales inspire us to try harder and to keep going no matter what. Now, although we're doing these not your average kids' Bible stories that are well known, I don't assume everyone does know the story. And to give you the rundown, I've got some pictures I grabbed off the web telling this story. So we have the Philistines going into battle against God's people, Israel. And the Philistines send forward this giant, this 3-meter-tall warrior who challenges the Israelites to send out their champion. The Israelites, in front of this, run away in fear. They're scared. But young David, not yet old enough to be on the war front, comes to the front to deliver food, and he overhears Goliath's challenge, and he volunteers to King Saul to go and fight for Israel. And so King Saul gives David his armor and sword, but David instead chooses 5 stones and a sling. Well, when he comes to Goliath, Goliath thinks this is pretty funny and he laughs, but next minute, David gets the stone in his sling right between the eyes, one punch knockout concussion protocol, and then he kills Goliath. But what is this story about? What is this doing for us? What does it mean, this story, this David and Goliath? If everyone uses it to say the big guy versus the little guy, what does it mean for us as Christians to read this as God's word to us? Now, to help us with this, hopefully the sound will come through. I've taken the end of 2 videos from kids' Bible stories on YouTube to see how they've applied it. So we're going to have a look at these videos now.
And just then, David slung a stone through the air and hit Goliath right
between the eyes.
So Israel was safe.
And who did God use?
Not big, strong King Saul or his army.
Not Jesse's warrior sons.
It was David, because he trusted God.
And when we trust God with everything, God can use us to do amazing things.
Even if we are small.
That's right.
And the Israelites cheered and celebrated. They had been saved by a young boy with a brave heart. David became a hero, and later he would become the great king of Israel. From that day on, everyone remembered how courage, faith, and a little stone defeated a giant. And so, David's story reminds us that no matter how big our challenges are, we can overcome them with bravery and faith. The Israelites cheered and celebrated. They had been saved by a young boy with a brave heart. David became a hero, and later, he would become the great king of Israel.
Great. Let's look, some dodgy AI in that second one, I think we can all agree. But even I think the AI summary is interesting. I don't know if you can read it there, but the lessons are no matter how big our challenges, we can overcome them with bravery. And God can use us to do amazing things even if we're small. Now, those moral lessons are kind of true enough, and I think even in a way for Christians, but I reckon your average Disney movie could do a better job of teaching those lessons. Surely for us, the Bible must be saying something more than be brave and small people can do amazing things. And that's our challenge as we revisit this today in the Bible. What does it mean for us? And part of that story means we need to understand this not as a standalone encounter, but how it fits in the bigger storyline. David is about 3,000 years ago, about 1,000 BC, the events of his life. But this, of course, sits in the biggest story of the Bible. We know the story of creation and Adam and Eve in the garden. They're made in God's image, and then you can see the snake there. They reject God as ruler by following the serpent and eating the forbidden fruit. The result of this is sin and judgment enter the world. But there is a promise in Genesis 3, in the third chapter of the Bible, to the serpent. God says, "Curse to you, and you will go on your belly all the days of your life." But there's a promise there that there will be enmity between your offspring and the woman's, and he will crush your head. So we start the Bible storyline with, yes, sin and death has entered the world, but we are now in seek of this serpent crusher who will defeat Satan, sin, and death once and for all. From Adam and Eve, you might know these characters, so I'm getting you teaching them in their chronological order, in their order they appear in the Bible. We've got Noah and the Ark. For those who were around earlier this year, you might remember we then looked at Abraham. He's about 2000 BC, and you might remember this series we did in Kids Church and Main Church here, where Abraham is promised by God that this curse of sin will be reversed. And we find out this serpent crusher will be a descendant of Abraham. Right, when we saw those promises that God would give Abraham a great name, land, offspring, but through Abraham, the whole earth will be blessed. And then to fast forward from Abraham, we get into Exodus with Moses coming out of Egypt, the Red Sea, about 1450 BC. And then last week, we saw the story of Rahab. It's around 1400 BC, so about 400 years after that, with Israel now in the land. And that sets the scene for us as we begin with David and Goliath. And our particular story here opens up in a very cinematic way. We've got this great battle that we read about in the first three verses. You've got the Philistine gathering their forces for war against Israel. And it is quite cinematic. See there, verse 3, you've got the Philistines on one hill, the Israelites on the other hill, and the valley between them. You can almost picture it, can't you, with your movie mind, how they're set up. Think of State of Origin, two fronts ready to come at each other. And you can see on the map here, perhaps, that's the Dead Sea to the east and the Mediterranean to the west. And if you zoom in there, you can see the area, which is west of Bethlehem, where this took place. And we soon meet Goliath, a champion named Goliath. He's really tall, 3 meters tall, we are told. He's got a scale of armor and bronze. It's pretty heavy, 58 kilograms of armor, 7 kilograms spear. He's an impressive specimen. Now we think, how could this be real? People don't get that tall. But the tallest man to ever exist, Robert Wadlow, this is your Guinness Book of World Records Hall of Famer, he was 2.7 metres tall, so we're only another yay high above him. But with carrying that sort of weaponry, we shouldn't think of Goliath as a sort of Robert Wadlow, thin and lanky. He's more like Shaq, like a human tank. Think human tank, not someone who you just knock over in a moment, but built. And here's something really interesting in the description that doesn't come across in our translation of the Bible. But one of the interesting things is we keep getting this reference to bronze, his bronze helmet, his bronze armor, bronze javelin. And the Hebrew word for bronze, it's nekoshade, has the same consonants as the Hebrew word for servant. And you read Hebrew right to left, there's no vowels in the original. So it's kind of a Hebrew pun here. It sounds like I'm speaking parcel tongue when I talk about nekoshet and nekash. But to a Hebrew, it's a pun. To describe it in this way, there's something very snake-like about Goliath just by that word. It's caught also in our passage, very snake-like, not just from this pun, this play on words with serpent and bronze, but even his armor is described as scale armor. I don't think this is accidental that we're meant to see this here. And Goliath here issues a challenge. He says, "Am I not a Philistine? And give me a man and let us fight one another." And the idea is you'd send out your best man and winner takes all. For wrestling fans, Goliath is a classic heel. He's a villain you're meant to boo when he comes out. And there's a reason that when he describes himself as a Philistine, we should boo. Because a couple of chapters earlier in 1 Samuel 4, they have captured the Ark of God, this case that represented God's presence. And what they did is they took it off to their own town and brought God's presence inside their own temple next to Dagon, their god. But there's this funny thing that happens that they come in the next morning and their fake god has fallen over as if it's worshipping the presence of God. So they're standing back up and they come in the next night and Dagon has fallen on his face again with his head and his hands fallen off. This is foreshadowing, of course. But Goliath issues the challenge to the Israelites and we're meant to boo because he's a Philistine. But the Israelites have a tall leader themselves. When he asks for a challenger, we know who should be the challenger. It's the one who is leading God's people at this time, who is King Saul. King Saul, who we were told back in chapter 9, already stands a head height above Israel. He should be the tall champion. But how does Saul respond? Saul and the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Well, next we meet our unlikely hero. Again, it's very artfully recorded. You can tell why this has been filmed and captured our imagination. We cut to a new scene where David, the son of Jesse, is tending his sheep and talking with his dad. The older sons have gone to war, but David stayed back home. We already know a lot about David from Samuel. Initially, the people had chosen Saul as their king because he looked impressive. He was tall, and God gave them what they wanted. But Saul had disobeyed God, and so God chose a new king. And all David's brothers were paraded out one at a time. They're all tall and strength. And God's prophet had said, "No, not him, not him, not him." All the older brothers, like oldest kids always get the gifts, don't they? They always get the best things, I think. I'm not an oldest child. But all the, "No, no, no, get to the youngest." And yes, it's him. And Samuel is told, don't consider the other's appearance or height, his tall brothers. Because people look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. David is chosen because he's a man after God's own heart. And he's the one that's chosen eventually to replace Saul as king. He's a short king. And so, 1 Samuel 16:13, Samuel takes the horn of oil, and this is what you do when someone becomes king, and he anointed him in the presence of his brother. Here we have a painting representation of the anointing when David becomes the next king. Now, here's another key thing that we miss. The Hebrew word for anointed is Messiah. And the Greek word for anointing is Christ. David has become God's Messiah, his Christ. And as a result of that, from that moment forward, he has the Spirit of the Lord. So we all know this if we're reading the story of David and Goliath in the Bible as background. So here we have David, the man chosen to be God's future king. And his dad sends him out to the front to send food and for reassurance. The dad would be worried about his kids out in the battle. And as David gets to the front, Goliath steps forward and calls out his challenge again, and David hears it. And he says, verse 26, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" David is concerned for God's reputation. He sees this as a spiritual battle, and he knows that to oppose God's people is to mock the Lord. David sees that Goliath is raising a fist not just at Israel, but at God himself. This is why he's a man after God's own heart. Then we get this little incident where David's older brother doesn't like him being there. Okay, who's the oldest in their family? Who's not the oldest in their family? Yeah, that's me. Has there ever been a more older brother statement than this from 1 Samuel 17 to 28? He says, "Why have you come down here, and with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle. What are you doing here? You always get away with everything. You just sit around and watch your youngest child while the rest of us do the work." And why do oldest children always think they're perfect? Anyway, I'm just giving a bit of my therapy here. I saw my sister this morning. She's really lovely. Anyway, let's move on. So then we move on to the next incident. He's heard the challenge and he is willing to step forward. And so here's my question. Is David just a little boy? And here's where your average kid's Bible story often goes wrong. Because how is David presented? Often as no more than a child, a tiny kid. Is this teaching then... that it's, you know, that old saying, it's not about the size of the dog in the fight, but the size of the fight in the dog. I love that saying. Is that really what's going on here? Is this like this overly confident youngster that's coming? I don't know if you watched the Boxing Day test, Sam Constance just coming in, ramp-shotting to the fastest, best bowler in the world. Just no care whatsoever. Maybe false courage. Well, is that what's going on here with David? But look what the text says. Word gets to Saul that David is volunteering. And David says, "Your servant will go and fight him." But notice what Saul replies to him. "Yes, you are only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth." It's not that you're too short, but that you lack experience. David, of course, says, "I've had plenty of experience." And look what he says next. Does this really go with, you know, your young child? David said, "I've been keeping sheep for my family. I've killed lions and bears to rescue them from the sheep." Sure, his lack of height was mentioned at the anointing, but that could have been years ago in the narrative. We're not sure how long has passed. And his overpowered beast, Goliath, well, he's just another predator to defeat. "I've killed lions and bears, and God will deliver this uncircumcised Philistine into my hands." So, you know, it's rescued me from the paw of the lion, the paw of the bear, and the Hebrew says, "and from the paw of this Philistine." David's not just this weak no one. He's killed a lion. He's killed a bear. David's brave, but he's not foolish in making this offer. And yes, this language of the youngest could be smallest in size. Here he is fighting a lion as represented. That's not normally how we picture it in the stories, in the kids' Bibles. But his brothers are tall, and we know how genetics work. Tall families tend to have tall kids across the line. Even in the previous chapter, he already has a reputation as a brave man and a warrior, even though he's not yet old enough to come to the front. And so even the other thing that I think makes people think he's short is when he tries on David's tunic, gets his sword, and then we get this comical picture that I showed you before. Kids are going back to school. Does anyone's parents buy them shoes that are two sizes too big because you'll grow into it? Now, my mum was like that. I looked like, oh, my kids are putting their hand up. Yes. You look like a clown walking around those first few days. It's so much shame. More therapy, sorry. But that's the picture here. But notice again the text as we read it closely. Yes, he goes walking around in them, but it doesn't say they were too big to him, but he was not used to them. He hadn't tested them in the Hebrew. I cannot use this because I'm not used to them. It's not that they're completely swallowing him alive, although they would have been big because Saul was big, but it's because he's not experienced in wearing that particular armor. Maybe too restricting, maybe too heavy, but he puts the armor aside and instead takes a staff, five stones and a sling in his hand. And here's where we get to the famous bit of action, the stone, and what we often miss, the sword. Goliath thinks this is a bit of a laugh, that they've sent this young, handsome kid, and he sees David probably just holding the stick from afar, and Goliath says, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks like this?" And maybe the staff in the hand, maybe David is still a bit thin, even if he's grown taller. And he then mocks the Lord. He cursed David by his gods. David, however, knows that the victory that's about to come will be all from God. He says, "I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel. The Lord will deliver you into my hands, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel." Then we read that all those gathered there will know that it's not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's. What we're meant to see from this is that it's the Lord who gives victory. And so David runs forward, he reaches out into his bag, grabs a stone and slings it straight into the forehead of Goliath, who falls straight down on the ground. And we read that David triumphed without the sword, just with the rock and sling. And here's where most kids' Bibles end. But with great glee, Huxley read for us earlier how the story actually finishes. Not with David standing over the concussed Goliath, but after he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. I saw three kids' mouths drop open then. This is what the Bible teaches. There were so many Renaissance paintings of this moment. I searched David and Goliath, and there was no stone ones. They were just all really super violent, cutting off of heads. Am I still at G? Can I show one PG photo? Just briefly. Anyway, I thought I'd have to live up to the promise of PG. Anyway, check the live stream later if you missed it. Or come to night church. We'll study it in detail there. So that is a story of David and Goliath. He had five rocks, but he only needed one. But then he comes and cuts off David's head. Why do the kids' Bibles avoid this? They've cut off an important part. I like that joke. Anyway, they've cut off an important part. And it's really important to the bigger story. Remember that their false god, Dagon, the enemies will fall down and worship God, and just like their false gods, here their false champion also will be defeated. If we've read our Bibles from Genesis onwards and heard those echoes of the snake in all the references to the bronze and his scaly outfit, here we see the snake back on his belly, the head crushed by God's Messiah. See, what's being taught here to Israel is if you trust God by following his Messiah, your greatest enemies will be defeated decisively. And that's why we get that little coda at the end. There's a post-credit sequence to this film, kids, where we find out, who is this young man? David said, "I am the son of your servant, Jesse of Bethlehem." It's a reminder for us that this is David, the one who has been called Messiah, Christ, King. And he will save God's people from their greatest enemy. So what are we meant to learn from David and Goliath? The first thing is, this is not a fairy tale. This is not a fable for against the odds victories. You know, be brave, show courage, go from last to first, fight the corporation, fight the big guy. It's not about naming your habitual sins, as I've heard someone do it. Write those sins on five stones, and then God will slay those giant sins with those stones. That's how the David and Goliath movie slogans put it. There's a lot of movies made about this. You can't read the subtitles there, but it says, you know, against all odds. And when God is with us, nothing can stand against us. Or it's the battle of faith, the classic tale of good versus evil. Now, some of those statements are, there's some truth to those statements, isn't there? Bravery, courage, power to overcome. We can do all things through him who gives me strength, we saw in context in Philippians. But we are to generalize this as if it's some sort of fairy tale with the classic stories, fairy tales with a moral lesson. Don't make David and Goliath nothing more than an inspirational fable. Don't make it about you've got giants in your life to slay. Now, you may have giants that need slaying in your life, but this isn't the part of the Bible that promises you victory. And here's the key to not read the Bible that way, is to know that you are not the hero of this story. Our temptation is to see ourselves as the hero. That's what social media does. We're tempted to see ourselves as a main character. I did make jokes about birth order before, but one of the good things about having lots of kids in the family is you know you are not the main character of any story. But we want to be the hero. It's why Spider-Man, I think, is the most popular superhero. He's the high schooler who becomes a superhero. And we all think when we're reading this as kids, maybe I'm one mutant spider or five stones in a slingshot away from hero status. So a good reflex when they're reading the Bible is not to see ourselves as the hero. If we're not Christians, we should identify with Goliath in this story, bold and standing opposed to the living God. And we, as the people of God, need to see ourselves as those in need of a champion, right?